The following program is brought to you by Total Theater Online. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the staff or management of WGBB. You're listening to the station that serves your community, 1240 WGBB. And now it's time for Dave's Gone By with David Lefkowitz.
Well, there goes the neighborhood. Welcome, everybody, to the 138th episode of Dave's Gone By, brought to you by Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine and Hewlett-Minuteman Press on this Thursday, August 4th, 2005. Happy August, everybody. What did I say a couple of weeks ago? The day after July 4th, they would start advertising Christmas ornaments on QVC, and a week later, back-to-school sales everywhere. I mean, let people enjoy their summer. I realize some colleges start their new semesters not after Labor Day, but a week or two before, which I don't understand. August is August. It's for swimming pools and barbecues and vacations and sitting in your house with the air conditioning on and the illegal day laborers mowing your lawn, and for endless repeats on TV and radio, but not here. We've got a brand new episode of Dave's Gone By for you tonight, including Inside Broadway with big casting news for the upcoming season's Broadway shows. We'll also pay a fond farewell to Broadway songwriter Robert Wright. He and his writing partner George Forrest did Kismet and Song of Norway and Grand Hotel, so a tribute is definitely in order. We've also got the News Gone By with a cracked look at current events, plus I'll be going off about the Aristocrats, the joke, the movie, the lifestyle. All tonight on Dave's Gone By, hosted by yours truly, Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, theater critic, humorist, and aristocraftsman. And we will begin the DGB 13 rated festivities, or, as I like to say, this grand ho-hum, right after these impudent messages.
Hey, can I get this thing copied?
Yeah, dude, 15 cents a page, plus ink, labor, parts.
Parts? Yeah, I need that of heavy stock, bound and laminated.
Whoa, we don't do that.
All right, just copies then.
No problemo, take a week or two.
What? Give me my copies back.
Just a minute, man.
That's it! Minuteman! I should have gone to Hewlett Minuteman Press. They do everything, copying, shipping, gifts, 1315 Broadway and Hewlett.
Ain't that next to Fortunoff?
Out of my way, hippie. I'm off to Hewlett Minuteman Press.
Copy on, dude.
Did you know Dave Lefkowitz of Dave's Gone By is not just a radio personality, he's also a playwright, and his book, Marriage Babies and the End of the World, is filled with the same humor he brings to his show every week. Funny, sad, and true. At only $20 hardcover, $12 trade paperback, Marriage Babies and the End of the World makes a great gift. So get your copy today. Call 516-295-1511. That's 516-295-1511. Or email davesgoneby@aol.com.
Inside Broadway, brought to you by Total Theater's Performing Arts Insider, your everything theater guide. Here we are in the beginning of August, and it's a rather quiet time for Broadway. Not a lot of openings or big premieres. But don't be fooled. There's kind of all this beehive activity going on. It's just happening for later in the season. Although, actually, there are two things that we did find out this week. One show that I was supposed to be talking about tonight has actually delayed its opening by a week and a half. It's that musical Lennon, conceived and directed by Don Scardino. They're working on it a bit more. Apparently there's some problems with the book, and they brought in some help. So instead of August 4th, it's going to be opening August 14th at the Broadhurst. But better news for a show called Primo, the biography, or the autobiography, actually, of Primo Levi, that's reenacted by Anthony Scher, got some wonderful reviews. It's a very good piece, and that was extended a week to August 14th, so you have two more weeks to see it. Anyway, as I said, the real news that's coming out of the this week is the castings going on for shows that are happening this fall and spring on Broadway. So this is the time when they're first getting the actors, and then they'll rehearse, get the sets together, and then we'll see the results of what's going on now in the months to come. For example, the cast for Absurd Person Singular has been announced. That's the old Alan Ayckbourn comedy, and they've got some familiar names coming into there. Lorraine Amos, and if that doesn't sound like a particularly familiar name, or if her last name makes you giggle a little bit, remember that she was a Tony nominee last season for Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. She played Honey, that sort of ditzy, a little bit drunken wife there. Clea Lewis from TV fame, Alan Ruck, Deborah Rush, and the estimable Paxton Whitehead are all starring in Absurd Person Singular, starting in mid-September at the Biltmore, with John Tillinger directing. Connor McPherson, a very esteemed Irish playwright, not Martin McDonagh, he's the guy who wrote The Pillow Man, but the other guy, a quieter fella, often writes monologues. He had a Broadway show that critics kind of liked a few years back called The Weir. Well, he's got a new play out called Shining City, and that will be playing the Gerald Schoenfeld Theater in mid-October, and they got some pretty cool actors in there, Rufus Sewell and Geraldine Hughes, and you'd know her from her Broadway show this past season, Belfast Blues, which was actually quite good. Barefoot in the Park, the old Neil Simon classic. Well, we'll see if it's a classic. It's been a long, long time since that one's come back to Broadway. That's going to be playing sometime this season. Still not sure which theater. Neil Simon wrote it. Scott Elliott directs it. And dig this cast. You've got Tony Roberts. You've got Patrick Wilson, who was in The Full Monty. You've got the lovely Amanda Peet and Jill Clayburgh. And I think I mentioned this either on Inside Broadway or on Worldview, which is that show that Joe Salzone does on Sunday nights, where he gives me a couple of minutes to talk about Broadway. And we were playing 6 Degrees of Jill Clayburgh, because she's married to David Rabe, who just had the revival of Hurley Burley out. Her, or their, daughter is Lily Rabe, who is just in Steel Magnolias and going into another show this season. And now you've got Jill Clayburgh, who hasn't been on stage in New York in about 15 years, doing 2 shows on Broadway this season. Barefoot in the Park, and also a new Richard Greenberg play, A Naked Girl on the Appian Way. Doug Hughes, who directed Doubt, is directing this one. And dig the cast on this. Richard Thomas, of course, from The Waltons, and also last year's Democracy. And you have Matthew Morrison, who's going to come out of A Light in the Piazza to do this show. And it's going to be a big season for Richard Greenberg, and I'll tell you why. But I want to tell you a couple of other things first. You've also got Rabbit Hole coming up from David Lindsay Abair. He's the guy who wrote Fuddy Mears, so he has a very kind of odd, dark sense of humor. Daniel Sullivan is directing Rabbit Hole, and Cynthia Nixon from Sex and the City will be in that cast. So dig all these names. Richard Thomas, Joe Clayburgh, Paxton Whitehead, Amanda Peet, Cynthia Nixon, and they're even thinking of bringing Diana Rigg into Broadway this spring in The Importance of Being Earnest. But there's a name, there's a big star who's coming to Broadway in the spring that may not be as great an actress as some of these people, but is certainly more famous and more, in some ways, Hollywood beloved than almost anyone you can think of. Who is she? I'll tell you in just a moment, but first I've got to remind you that if you love Broadway, you really should subscribe to Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine. It's a Bible of the theater industry and has been for more than 6 decades. Performing Arts Insider offers Broadway rumors, contact information for producers and managers, listings of all the shows on and off Broadway, both now and in the months to come. This is the guide the professionals use, Performing Arts Insider. The August issue is on sale now at the Drama Bookshop in Manhattan, and it has all the Fringe Festival shows plus a whole bunch of Broadway news. But why schlep to the bookstore when you can get Performing Arts Insider delivered to your home or office every month, or twice a month if you go for the full season subscription. Either way, Dave's Gone By listeners get 10% off the subscription price. People in the industry pay top dollar for this publication, but it is yours at a 10% discount just for being a Dave's Gone By listener and theater lover. Call 516-295-1511, 516-295-1511. You can learn more about the magazine at performingartsinsider.com. So whether you call 516-295-1511 or visit performingartsinsider.com, you really should make Performing Arts Insider a part of your theater-going and cultural life. Why? because it's Broadway the best way. And yes, Broadway is getting the best of Hollywood this coming spring when 3 Days of Rain, a Richard Greenberg drama from a couple of years ago, is getting a revival. It was done off-Broadway at Manhattan Theater Club, and now they're going to be doing it on Broadway with Joe Mantello directing. Now, he's one of the hottest directors on Broadway because he did Wicked and the recent and wonderful Glengarry Glen Ross revival. His lead actress in the show, Julia Roberts, the one and only Pretty Woman and, gosh, Pelican Papers. What are some of her other shows? I'm blanking at the moment, but she's probably the biggest Hollywood female star there is. And the interesting thing is, unlike, say, Suzanne Summers, who came into Blonde and the Thunderbird last month and left just as quickly, this isn't. It is a showcase role because it's kind of an interesting play where you see adults in the first act, and they're talking about their parents years ago, and they're the fathers who had an architectural business together. Then in the second act, they go back and play their parents. So you've got these two generations going on, and that's what really attracted her, apparently, to the part, because she did a reading of it in Los Angeles in June. But it isn't like a one-woman show, and, you know, all three, I think there are three actors in it, roles are pretty important. So kind of a cool and interesting thing, and it's going to be a hot, hot ticket coming up in the spring. They don't know which theater, they don't know exactly when, but Julia Roberts coming to Broadway in spring 2006. And so are some musicals as we continue inside Broadway. You know, it isn't just the plays that have been cast or cast with some of their leads. We've got a revival of The Pajama Game coming to Broadway in November with Harry Connick Jr. There's also a newly adapted three-penny opera with a revised book by Wallace Shawn. The Roundabout is doing that one at Studio 54 in the spring with Alan Cumming from their cabaret, Edie Falco from The Sopranos, and singer Nellie McKay in that one. A revival of Sweeney Todd, the classic, the masterwork by Stephen Sondheim from 1979, is getting a very talked about revival with Patti LuPone playing Mrs. Lovett and Michael Cerveris from Tommy in the cast as Sweeney. For a minute I was going to say he was going to play Toby, but no, he's the lead role there as Sweeney Todd. We've also got a new musical called The Wedding Singer by Tim Herlihy and Chad Begwelin, hope I'm pronouncing that right, coming in March 2006. They just cast that one. Not exactly famous names, Stephen Lynch, Jason Antoon, and from Nine, Laura Benanti. We've got The Broadway Follies, a review that's supposed to be happening in spring 2006. I'll believe that one when I see it. I'm a little skeptical, but Florence Henderson is supposed to lead the cast in that. And then finally, a new musical by Joseph Brooks. I don't hold high hopes for this one, I admit, but hey, you know, you got to give everything its chance. With Jessica Biebers and Christopher Ja Honke, I think I'm reading that right. I think I wrote that right. In that musical, it's by the guy who wrote the song You Light Up My Life. Dig the synopsis on this one. He has Tourette's, she has obsessive compulsive disorder, and they fall in love. I swear to God, I don't make these things up. Anyway, that is Inside Broadway for this week. Well, I'll also let you know, hate to end on a down note, but a couple of obituaries this week, including cabaret artist Hildegard, actually I should call her cabaret artiste Hildegard, who made it to the age of 99 before dying last week, and the Broadway songwriter Robert Wright. Now we're going to hear a bunch more about him at the end of this show. We'll play some music and talk about his life, because he was kind of important. But it, you know what, to me, I love theater, it's all important, and that's why I talk about it on Inside Broadway. We've just been Inside Broadway. Thanks to TotalTheater.com and Performing Arts Insider. Hey, theater lovers! Do you like the Inside Broadway segment on Dave's Gone By? If you do, you can hear even more about Broadway and beyond on a special segment I do on Worldview. What's Worldview? Tell them, Joe Salzone.
Worldview is a 60-minute conversation about what's going on in the world, and it features Dave Lefkowitz's Theater Review and other great segments only on WGBB.
When is that?
Sunday night, 7 o'clock. Don't watch 60 Minutes. Instead, spend 60 minutes with us.
I need more Dave!
Oh, I hear that all the time. Once a week is not enough, but you can get all the Dave you want on CD. Dozens of complete episodes, just $14 per disc, shipping and handling included. Add one more dollar for a personal autograph. Dave's Gone By CDs come with jewel cases, photos, liner notes. Makes a great gift. So, for more info, check our website or email davesgoneby@AOL.com and ask for the CD list. Thanks, Dave!
Wake up the global good!
My radio's on, the news is all bad, but it's good to relax.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. It's time for the News Gone By, a look at world and local events of the past week from an aristocrappy perspective. You know, one day, Rudolph Giuliani may be president of the United States, God help us, but let's thank God he's not the president of Austria. In contrast to the controversies in New York museums about Mapplethorpe paintings and Serrano scenarios, Vienna's Leopold Museum is proudly offering a new exhibit, The Naked Truth. It's all about artworks from the turn of the previous century that exhibit the naked human form in an aesthetic and occasionally erotic fashion. We're not talking about R. Crumb here. These folks are like Gustav Klimt and Egon Schiele and Oskar Kokoschka. But what's really funky about the exhibit is that people can get in free if they go in wearing a skimpy swimsuit or nothing at all. One visitor, clad only in a green and black Speedo, told the Associated Press, quote, "What's the big deal? We're born naked into this world. Why can't we walk around in it without clothes from time to time?" For the answer to that question, I must warn him that Ruben Studdard and Kirsty Alley are scheduled to visit the museum in early August, but don't panic. Along with the customary headsets, the docents will rent out blindfolds. In crime news, I know some parts of New York are dangerous, but we've got nothing on Brazil. In Rio de Janeiro, a dead woman lying in her casket was hit by a stray bullet during her wake. Mourners fled in panic as a shootout between a drug-peddling gang and police turned, well, post-deadly. The bullet pierced the side of the woman's coffin and lodged in her pelvis. They did not remove it, they just buried her that way, which is actually a problem for the poor woman because they just installed metal detectors up in heaven. So every time she goes through the pearly gates, okay, bear with me, people, they get better. In health news, congratulations, I think, to Ronnie Moore of Cleveland, Ohio. Ronnie is a quadriplegic, paralyzed from the neck down since a 1998 car accident. 5 weeks ago, he received a life-changing implant. No, he won't be able to walk. No, he won't be able to wiggle his toes. But he will be able to cough. All he has to do is push a button on a control box attached to his wheelchair. The button is connected to electrodes implanted near his lower spinal cord. A small charge activates the electrodes, causing his abdominal muscles to contract and give him a good strong cough. And I understand the importance of that. I mean, the cough clears your lungs and makes you less susceptible to respiratory infections, which are a leading health concern of paralytics. But still, if you couldn't move and you were granted one operation to make your life easier, wouldn't you go for, like, artificial hand, voice-controlled typing, silicone penis pump, anything? No, this guy chooses to spend allergy and flu season like the rest of us, coughing and hacking and clearing his throat. I mean, I feel sorry for the guy's condition, but, you know, you figure, finally, there's one stranger you wouldn't mind sitting next to at the movies, and he goes and does this. Moving to entertainment news, a post office in Los Angeles is having a name change. The facility is close to the studio where Ray Charles recorded some of his biggest hits. So President Bush wrote into law a bill officially changing the building's name to the Ray Charles Post Office. Asked why they wanted to honor the great singer in this way, the postmaster said, "Well, it's really not about his music. It's because the handwriting on letters here is so bad, we've all gone blind and turned to drugs." Hey, remember the last news gone by where a New York woman was suing Con Ed because she burned her backside on a manhole cover? Now a Kansas woman is suing a Denny's outlet in St. Louis for burning her butt in their bathroom. She'd gone to the loo, which, let's face it, you wind up doing at Denny's whether you want to or not, sat down on the toilet seat and didn't notice there was industrial-strength chemical cleanser all over it. Her lawyer said she suffered serious burns on her buttocks and now has to take pain medication and wear, quote, undergarments designed for burn victims, unquote. What are undergarments designed for burn victims, I wonder? Thongs, I guess. Anyway, Denny's has no comment, although off the record, the CEO told reporters that lawsuits in general are a big pain in the ass. He then apologized for his choice of words and said he didn't mean to make the victim the butt of a joke. He then apologized for his choice of words and excused himself to order some new buns. And then he just left. In book news, 2 weeks after it hit the Western world, Harry Potter fever is now gripping China, where unauthorized translations of the latest adventure just hit the streets. The official Chinese printing of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince isn't due in Beijing till November, but unscrupulous pirates are getting the jump with their version. It's similar, but fans say that sections are accidentally omitted and there are mistranslated words throughout. Now, I'm not saying it's a muddled translation, but in Chapter 15, the mystery of how to kill Lord Voldemort is solved by Paddington Bear. Speaking of kids, 13-year-old Majalik Lewis has been found. Lewis had disappeared from a Yankee Stadium men's room after last Friday night's game. His family became frantic, called the cops, screamed through hours and hours of security tapes, but with no luck. Then, Sunday morning, they found him, standing in front of a building all the way in Queens. His mother expressed relief at the happy outcome, although she remains bewildered at how a park so busy and well-monitored could lose sight of a teenage boy. In related news, Michael Jackson has announced major plans to renovate Neverland, saying he hopes to make it more like Yankee Stadium. News of another kind of sport. A British couple who headed out to sea in a small rubber boat were rescued by the Coast Guard, but they didn't want to be. A passerby heard strange noises coming from the waters near Torbay Beach and quickly alerted authorities. Police patrols found the couple and discovered that their noises were something else. They were brought ashore and asked to put their clothes back on. A police spokesman said that both the man and woman were in good condition, though there was some wear and tear on the man's dinghy. Yes, 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 that's the sound of the comedy bell, signaling that Dave's gone by. Bad pun of the week. Whenever we do the news gone by, we make a play on words so boatiful, so canoodling, so full of ship, that you'll say, anchor very much, and cheer when we ring the comedy bell. That's because the bell reminds everyone that Dave's Gone By is a great place to advertise your product, business, or service. For just a few dollars a week, you can be part of this special hour of radio. It's an hour where the listeners really listen. They're not surfing back and forth. They're not using this for background noise. Dave's Gone By has a loyal core audience, and we reach them with three time-proven methods. Repetition, humor, and repetition. We offer everything from 30-second ads to whole sponsorship packages, all of them tailored to help you reach my audience. And WGBB carries 1,000 watts up and down Nassau County, other parts of New York, and all over the world on the Internet. Plus, my shows are preserved on CD, being rebroadcast, even archived on the web. A lot of people are listening. Hit them with your best shot. Call 516-295-1511 to find out how. 516-295-1511 or email davesgoneby@aol.com. We'll send you the rate card or you can see the prices at davesgoneby.org. If you're listening to this show, chances are thousands of people just like you are tuned in as well. What would you say to them if you could? Think it, write it, call us, 516-295-1511. To sponsor the Dave's Gone By, bad pun of the week. Don't be good, be ponderful. So you think your plumber overcharges or does shoddy work? Be happy you didn't hire Roy Williams, who was caught in a sting operation in southern England. Standards officers rented a house there, rigged it with cameras, and then set up a minor leak in the pipes. Then they call in repairmen and see whether they fix the problem and how much they would charge. Well, Roy Williams went into the house, climbed to the attic, and peed into a vase. He then poured his urine into the central heating system and washed out the vase in the cold water tank. Adding insult to enuresis, he then charged £200 to fix the problem he created. Confronted by authorities, Williams denied all charges and, get this, said he had a medical condition that made him pee a lot, and he had to use the vase because he was so overcome by the sound of running water. Somehow, a judge didn't believe his story of being unable to cope with the water noise told by a plumber, especially when another witness came forward and said, "You think peeing in a vase is bad? You should see what he left in a candy dish." And finally, my very expert mother just served us 9 pickles. Alice, Boris, Claudia. Yes, your kids are going to have to learn a brand new, or at least revised, mnemonic to remember the planets in the solar system. That's because scientists have just discovered a new planet 9 billion miles away from the Sun. And it's a whopper, too, bigger than Pluto. The object was first photographed in 2003, but it was so far away, and at such an askew angle, its motion couldn't even be analyzed until now. They're also in the process of naming the planet, which is dark and rocky and icy. As such, so far the leading suggestion is Grande Mochaccino. And that's the news gone by for August 4th, 2005. Please send your comments, opinions, and wayward dinghies to Dave's Gone By, Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. That's Dave's Gone By, P.O. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. You can also email davesgoneby@aol.com or give us a look at davesgoneby.org. Either way, your input is crucial to the success and survival of this program. Tell your friends, tell your parents, your co-workers, tell people with connections in radio so we can syndicate the show, not just in New York, but other cities and satellites. But if nothing else, tell me what you think. You can send cards, letters, postcards, packages, but please, no urine-filled vases. Unless they're also filled with chrysanthemums. Back after this.
And that was news. Yes, that was news. That was very, very, very special news.
Oh, honey, you turn me on. I'm the radio.
That's right, Joni. I turn you on all week long for a bunch of shows on WGBB, like Wednesday nights at 11 for psychic astrologer Joyce Keller, hosting radio's longest-running psychic advice show. She knew I'd say that. Thursday nights at 6, an hour before Dave's Gone By, it's WGBB Tonight with Larry Davidson. Friday nights at 6, Bonnie D. Graham has advice about being single and singular on Long Island's dating. It's a madhouse. It's a zoo. It's Mikey and Jimmy Saturday nights. And then on Sundays at 7, Joe Salzone offers conservative politics with a sense of humor and an open mind on your world.
If you're driving into town,
dial in AM 1240 WGBB for Joyce Keller Wednesday nights at 11, Larry Davidson Thursdays at 6, yours truly at 7, Bonnie D. Graham Fridays at 6, and Joe Salzone Sundays at 7.
Call me at the station, the lights are open.
Dave goes off, Dave goes off, Dave goes off. Dave goes off.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on this Thursday night, August 4th, 2005. And I think there's going to be a new comedy landmark. And it's kind of like being asked, well, where were you the first time you saw Monty Python? Or where were you the first time you watched the movie The Producers? I think the new landmark is going to be, where were you the first time you heard about The Aristocrats? the joke. Yes, the joke that you've heard about from the movie that is coming out, or has just come out, although it's certainly not in wide release, directed by Paul Provenza and Penn Jillette of Penn and Teller fame. And basically, it's a bunch of comedians, about 70 of them, apparently, all talking about or telling variations of the very same joke. Now, I have not seen the movie. I am dying to. Some of the comedians that they get to talk about or do the joke are Sarah Silverman, Judy Gold, Jackie the Joke Man, Martling from the old, well, not the old Howard Stern show, but from when he was on it, George Carlin, who was apparently not the most vulgar or dirtiest practitioner, Bob Saget, who apparently is the guy from Full House, and Robin Williams, who also is in it. And I'm not telling you probably something you don't know about this at this point, because for such a small and small-level release film, it's been getting a lot of press. I mean, it made the cover of Time Out New York with Provenza and Gillette, and the headline saying, these guys want to tell you the dirtiest, filthiest, sickest joke in the history of the universe, and here's what they're going to do. And if you still haven't heard about the Aristocrats, well, I'm going to be the one to tell you about it, although I can't tell you what it is. But I will say that the movie is not my first coming upon this. And, you know, for someone who loves comedians and has read about them and loves comedy, I'm surprised at just how long it took me to find out, until I was about 39 or 40, because I read it, of all things, in the New York Times. Frank Rich had done a column a few months back on the use of humor in very difficult and tough times. And I don't know if it was connected at that point with, like, the London rail bombings or some of the other terrorism going on, or just the bad news in general that was coming out of Iraq. But what is a comic's place to be really out there and over the edge and pushing the envelope, especially when times call for something like that? And Frank Rich used as an example when he attended a roast for Hugh Hefner, the founder and still, well, he's not the putative head of Playboy, but he's still sort of the figurehead of Playboy Enterprises and Playboy Magazine. And he was being roasted at the Friars Club. Unfortunately, the roast had been scheduled for November of 2001, which turned out to be, of course, just a few weeks after 9/11. So, you know, they were still going to go through the roast, and they have all these famous comedians there to roast Hef, I think, on his 70th birthday or something. But apparently everybody was kind of skittish, and they were making, and people were laughing and giggling and saying, ooh, Hef and dirty stuff about him. But there was also an undercurrent in the air of almost, like, why are we here? Should we have canceled this? Let's not say anything too off putting. I mean, it's good to laugh after what happened in New York, but let's not really laugh. Well, closing the show, of all people, was Gilbert Gottfried, who's one of my favorite comedians in the whole wide universe. And he got up there and started to do some material and made a joke about sorry that he was almost late for the Friars Roast, but they would not, much as he begged them, they would not land the plane on the 25th floor of the Empire State Building. And people started, like, getting really kind of quiet, and there were some giggles, but people not laughing. And he tried a little more 9/11 humor, and some guy apparently shouted, too soon, you know, and it's just too soon to make jokes about it, because it was such an extraordinary disaster. And I guess, you know, Gilbert, even at that stage of his career, every comedian can still get that flop sweat moment. And he went out there, according to Frank Rich, and started telling this joke out of nowhere about a guy who goes into a talent agent with his family, with his wife and his two beautiful children and this family dog. And the guy goes, oh, Have I got an act for you? You definitely have to represent us and get bookings for us. And the talent agent says, look, you know, I'm don't really do family acts. It's a little too cutesy, not my thing, but you're here. You all came in, so go ahead, show me what you got. And the father then begins to describe the act, which involves every possible potential filthy and disgusting thing that people can do to each other, with each other, to and with animals and objects, bodily excretions and fluids involving the Ku Klux Klan and Mexicans and whatever you want to throw in there, but it has to be really more, each thing must be more disgusting than the last. And then at the very, very end, there's that great punchline, which is, well, the agent is completely stunned, doesn't say anything for ages, then looks at the father, or he watches after they performed the act, and he sees them all covered with goo and excrement and whatever else, and he says, okay, well, what do you call this act? And the father struts out his chest and says, the Aristocrats! Which, now, when I first read this in the New York Times, and this is before all this publicity for the film, months before, I was on the floor, word by word, as Frank Rich, who wasn't even telling the joke, just describing the kind of joke that it is, tears streaming out of my eyes, and also thinking of Gilbert Gottfried telling this joke at the Heff Roast, you know, 3 weeks after 9/11, 5 weeks. And so what I didn't know, and what I guess Frank did not know, was that the joke itself had this venerable, or, well, I don't know if that's the word, history, and that it wasn't Gilbert Gottfried's joke. In fact, it was the in-joke of comedians going back probably before Jack Benny into vaudeville, and who knows how further back than that. It's just Gottfried pulled it out of his bag of tricks when he needed it and did it in his own way, and realized that it was the time to really explode all these things that people had pent up in them. And apparently, if you see the film, it's the climax of the movie, The Aristocrats, that bit of the Hefner roast, and people are just falling all over themselves. I mean, professional comics who are, you know, who laugh out of politeness, but, you know, don't really laugh necessarily, are falling out of their chairs, are just absolutely in shrieking hysterics with every line that Gilbert is saying. And, of course, the beauty of the joke and apparently the interest of the film is that every comedian tells it differently. Most of them are scatological and awful, but I even think it doesn't have to be. I mean, you could probably tell the joke to an 8-year-old's children's birthday party just to have the family do kind of gross things, like the father picks his nose and the mother juggles fish and, the children roll around in mud, and then the father says, wow, the aristocrats! And it still would kind of work for that audience. Apparently, they say in one of the reviews that Robin Williams tells it in a reverse way, which I can only imagine means that the act is incredibly pristine. It's like beautiful people juggling goblets of wine, and they're all in these fancy, lovely costumes, and they're in tuxedos, and they do all this perfect stuff, and then they're asked, well, what's the name of the act? And they say something so filthy and foul that obviously I can't say it on the radio. I'm dying to see this movie. It's only playing in New York right now at Union Square and Lincoln Square. I don't think it's even going to be many places in Long Island at all. It's going to play in one place all the way in East Hampton starting August 12th. Why is this? Well, because there's always got to be controversy about something like this. The Kansas City-based AMC movie theater chain won't show it. But now, remember, there's not one visual act of sex or violence in this film. But, you know, Pendulette and Paul Provenza are totally open about saying, yeah, of course the film is obscene. The joke is obscene as possible for it to be funny. So AMC took them at their word and said, well, we're not showing an obscene film. But I wonder, how many films have they shown at their chain where they really show R-rated or NC-17 rated films of nudity and sex and harsh violence, and the worst, of course, sex-related violence in, like, horror movies, and yet a bunch of comedians talking in a very free way, expressing themselves, well, God forbid, you know, this should be open to audiences. And yes, I mean, I'm glad it'll be on the DVD because that will open things up. In fact, if you go to the Aristocrats website, they're even looking for new tellers of the joke. And you send in a videotape, and apparently if it makes the cut, it'll be on the DVD. I know I hate people who say you shouldn't go see a film even though they haven't seen it, and they say it's bad for you. I say this film is good for you, and I haven't even seen it because the beauty of comedy, it's the bond of people through humor that reaches into the deepest, darkest excesses of our souls. And also, you know, as obscene as it is, once the things are said, they're out there. I mean, the F word is a nasty word, but once you hear it a few times, it's just a word. You know, prudes don't say don't use it. Don't use the S word, don't use the S word, but once you've said it or heard it, it's done. It's the worst that can be done to you. It's not like getting shot, and then, you know, you get healed up in the hospital, have the bullet removed, and then you get shot again and die. I mean, you can get shot with a word a zillion times, it'll only be less brutal to you the more you hear it. You know, even South Park made that point. You can overuse profanity. Remember that episode where they said the S word about 500 times? And it can be sort of harmful in that level, but it's just words. And the beauty of it also, finally, is that you can't unhear a joke. You know, you can't think about it and then go back and say it never happened and claim innocence. You can't say, oh, my mind is pure, I can't even conceive, ... because it's been conceived and you've heard it. And you know what? The world doesn't collapse. It just gets a little more free.
Do you know how easy and inexpensive it is to advertise on Dave's Gone By? You don't? Well, hey, it's even easier to find out. You can run a 30 or 60 second ad or sponsor one of the segments on this show or the whole show. Just go to our website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By, to see the rate sheet, or call 516-295-1511. Bring your message to my audience. Advertise on Dave's Gone By. Do you believe in Pod? My God, Pod! Being able to download radio from the internet and listen to a podcast anytime, anywhere. Well, now you can do it with Dave's Gone By. 20 full episodes downloadable from theaterpod.com. Even without an iPod, you can just listen right on your computer. Go to theaterpod.com for radio on demand and hours of Dave's Gone By to enjoy. Theaterpod.com. It's free because Pod is love. Hi, this is Dave Lefkowitz of Dave's Gone By, reminding you to tune in every Thursday night at 8 and 11 Eastern Time for the best of Dave's Gone By on Live365.com and the special channel DFSX Radio. All you gotta do is go to my website, davesgoneby.org, click on the link, and you can hear a classic episode of Dave's Gone By every Thursday night, 8 and 11. Go to dfsxradio.com for more of me.
Take my hand, I'm a stranger in paradise. Oh, lost in a wonderland, a stranger in paradise. If I stand starry-eyed, that's a danger in paradise. For mortals who stand beside an angel like you, I saw your face and I ascended. Dark despair from all that I hunger for. what opens your angel's arms to the stranger in paradise and tell him that he need be a stranger no
Dave's Gone By, Tony Bennett there from his 16 Most Requested Songs collection. And it was the most requested song for 2 weeks in 1955 and spent 16 weeks on the top 40 charts. Stranger in Paradise was written 2 years earlier by Robert Wright and George Forrest for a Broadway show called Kismet. And it's kind of a misnomer to say they wrote Stranger in Paradise or most of the songs in that show. I mean, they did. But the melodies they used were all based on the works of composer Alexander Borodin, who lived a century earlier. And that was their thing. Every composer needs a thing. Sondheim's thing is being very lyrically clever, trying to be smarter than the average bear, and also express ambivalence through music. People think they're in love, but they aren't sure about it. People are ready to make a leap into the unknown, but they're just as ready to stay right where they are. Jerry Herman's thing is big, bright numbers about big, brassy ladies, optimism writ large. Andrew Lloyd Webber's thing, usually, is lavish musicals having the sweeping lyricism of opera. Well, Forrest and Wright's thing was raiding the closets of classical composers and weaving their melodies into pop tunes for musical theater. Happened almost by accident. They had been songwriters since going to high school together in Miami, and they got a great gig working for MGM, back when there was such a thing as movie musicals. And they worked, and they worked, anonymously and to little avail, when they were called in to save a project called Maytime. It was based on an operetta by Sigmund Romberg, but the producers said they only wanted to use one or two songs by Romberg in the movie. Forrest and Wright had to come up with the rest of the score. How did they do it? By pillaging Tchaikovsky and other composers, shaping their music into short, catchy ditties, and weaving them into the storyline. It worked, and they ended up scoring more than 50 films for MGM. But even then, they weren't satisfied. Wright said MGM was a good place to work, but you still felt anonymous, underappreciated in the wider scope of things. You're slaves in Hollywood, he once told an interviewer. Very happy slaves, but they own you, body and soul. So, George Forrest and Robert Wright took their bodies and souls to New York to work on Broadway. Their first hit was Song of Norway, which used the music of Edvard Grieg. Then came a Victor Herbert pastiche called Gypsy Lady, and a perhaps undeserved flop called Magdalena that sampled Villa-Lobos. But the biggie for them was 1953's Kismet, and its colorful, convoluted story about a crafty poet outwitting all these higher-ups in 11th-century Baghdad. Most critics weren't thrilled with the show, but audiences didn't know that because there was a newspaper strike at the time. Television critics were kinder, and with the show's exotic locale and lush costumes and sheer spectacle, plus Alfred Drake in the lead role, it ran for a year and a half, and that was a long time back then. And it was an even bigger hit in London, by which point Stranger in Paradise and Baubles, Bangles, and Beads were already part of the American popular songbook. Kismet even won the Best Musical Tony in 1954, which left Wright and Forrest with a great but scary question, as faced by all success stories, what next? Well, next it was Rachmaninoff for 1965's Anya, but that closed quickly. And in 1978, they went back to Kismet again, reworking it into Timbuktu, but audiences felt they should have stuck with Timbuk1. And that should have been it for this composing team, but what do you know? In 1957, they suffered a flop that closed out of town called At the Grand. It was based on a novel by Vicki Baum about all these eccentric personalities staying in a fancy Berlin hotel during the Weimar era. 30 years later, Forrest and Wright decided to revise that show with a book by Luther Davis and some additional music and lyrics by Maury Yeston. The result was one of their most loved productions, Grand Hotel. And go figure, it's the one show of theirs where the music was completely original, all their own stuff. I saw it twice. It was a good show, with director Tommy Tune absolutely at the top of his game. And it just so happened, the critics that year fell in love with City of Angels, and that ended up winning more Tonys, although Grand Hotel won a handful and ran for 2.5 years. That spurred Forrest and Wright on to work on a new show, based on the funny stories of P.G. Woodhouse. But George Forrest died in 1999, which put an end to that project. It's probably just as well, since Andrew Lloyd Webber's By Jeeves sped onto Broadway a couple of seasons ago and left just as fast. But Robert Wright, who was born on September 25th, 1914, hung around a couple more years living in his native Florida, until he died last Wednesday, July 27th, of natural causes. To the end, he bristled a little when people would assume he was taking the easy way out by using pre-written classical music instead of new melodies, so to speak. But he told one interviewer, quote, "It's actually 10 to 20 times harder to adapt classical music into original songs, because first, you have to learn everything a composer ever wrote. Then you have to assemble and assimilate the music, and finally, you have to think the way they did." Well, I'm glad George Forrest and Robert Wright thought the way they did about musicals. We're going to go out with a finale to Kismet called Sands of Time and sung by Alfred Drake. But before we overturn our sandglass, I want to remind you that you can hear another older episode of Dave's Gone By right now on DFSXRadio.com. That's a station on the cable radio network, Live 365. It sounds complicated with all those letters and numbers, but really, all you gotta do is go to my website, davesgoneby.org, click in the upper right-hand corner where it gives you the schedules, and it'll bring you right to DFSX. The show plays there from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern, and if you miss it, you can tune in at 11 and catch it all over again. In fact, by going to davesgoneby.org, you can hear some extra Dave anytime you want, because there's about a dozen vintage shows, complete, online, and absolutely free at theaterpod.com. You can download them to your iPod, which seems to be the latest in thing these days, or just play them straight on your computer, just like you'd listen to this show on AM 1240 WGBB.com. And speaking of WGBB, don't forget that I'm back here in 1 hour, 9 to 10 p.m., for a different program called Filler Up. On this show, you've heard me talk for nearly an hour straight. On Filler Up, it's almost all music, and tonight something really cool and atypical. Usually we honor the birthdays of composers and singers and lyricists. We'll play some of their songs, give you biographical information, kind of a nice semi-educational excuse to play some bitchin' music. But tonight, a new wrinkle, a game. Get a pen and paper and have them ready, because you'll want to write down the names of the songs and the singers. Write them all down in order throughout the whole show, because using those titles and or names, you're going to try to figure out a phrase. Somehow all these songs are connected, and they're connected by a phrase, a quote. You have to figure out what it is. That's tonight at 9 on Filler Up, right here on WGBB, which is lucky to have the services of Program Director Tom Ross. Thank you, Tom. Thank you also to my sponsors, Hewlett Minuteman Press, 1315 Broadway in Hewlett, for all your copying needs, and Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine for all your theater magazine needs. Click the links for both at davesgoneby.org, and remember that Dave's Gone By listeners get 10% off at both places. Well, I have to vacate this place, but not before I thank you for listening. not before I thank my wife for being wonderful and adorable, and my folks for being there for me in a pinch earlier this week, muchas gracias, and not before I remind you that I'll be back next Thursday, August 11th, for the 139th episode of Dave's Gone By. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz. Good night. Okay, this guy walks into a talent agency with his wife, his two kids, and a family dog. He says, I've got an amazing act. You're going to love it. The agent says, look, I never book family acts. They're too cutesy. But let me see what you got. The guy says, oh, you won't be disappointed. Watch this. He claps his hands three times. His wife gets on all fours and gone by.
Play on the cymbal, the timbal, the lyre. Play with appropriate passion, fashion songs of delight and delicious desire. For the night of their nights, somewhere the pro-elby love is waiting. Time they go.